Welcome back to Earth Matters on KURU at 89.1 FM in Silver City. I'm your host for today's show, Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and I am talking with attorney Cindy Toole of Western Watersheds Project. Before the break, we were talking about some of the ecological impacts of livestock grazing on public lands, and now I want to turn to the economics of grazing. Cindy, can you talk about the fee that ranchers pay for the privilege of grazing livestock on public lands?
I can, and the first thing that everyone should know is that it is incredibly low. Federal regulations set the minimum price for grazing livestock on federally managed lands, and that minimum price is just $1.35 per cow or per cow-calf pair. This is often referred to as an animal unit month or an AUM. So an AUM is a cow or a cow and her calf grazing for 1 month, and it can also refer to a single horse grazing for a month or five sheep grazing for a month or five goats. The formula used for calculating the grazing fee was established by Congress in the 1978 Public Rangelands Improvement Act. I don't think they intended it to stay at $1.35 since the 1970s, but it has remained at that level, fluctuating very little over the last few decades. And there was a 1986 presidential order which sort of sanctioned that level, the minimum level. Under the executive order from 1986, the fee can't fall below $1.35 per animal unit month per cow-calf pair, and any increase or decrease can't exceed 25% of the previous year's level. So you can, at most, go up just over a quarter or go down just over a quarter if in the change of that price. And that's to protect livestock permittees so they don't have an unexpected raise in their rent, which unfortunately is not something anyone else in the United States enjoys, that protection. The price an individual or more often a corporation pays for the privilege of grazing livestock on public lands today is that $1.35. That's the rock bottom price. It was dropped by the Trump administration from the $1.41 that the Obama administration had raised it to. And if you think about that, it's really not even possible to feed a goldfish for $1.35 per month. So it's an incredibly low rate.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the low rate wouldn't bother me personally so much if that's all it was, but it's also causing a lot of damage to our public lands on top of us losing money. So it personally gives me heartburn.
Right. And to put that $1.35 per cow-calf pair in context of what other wildlife are trying to depend on, one cow-calf pair is going to eat about the same amount of forage as two elk or seven deer or 10 pronghorn and an untold number of rodents, small mammals, birds, and insects. So that rancher is getting a real sweetheart deal at the expense of the other wildlife that are depending on that same forage.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's a really good point. And I also want to ask you, besides the ridiculously low grazing fees, like you said, you couldn't even feed a goldfish on that, what other subsidies do ranchers typically receive?
There are a lot of them. There are subsidies and programs that pay public lands ranchers for actually harming our public lands. You know, livestock grazing has a lot of negative impacts. There are state level subsidies and federal subsidies. So beyond that $1.35 per animal unit month that they pay to graze, there's something called the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture's Environmental Quality Incentive Programs. This is often referred to as EQIP. And that's where the Natural Resources Conservation Service doles out money to ranchers as part of a cost-sharing program to help the rancher implement conservation practices. And I put conservation in quotes because those conservation practices are usually fence construction or installation of livestock waters. The rancher is supposed to share in the cost of any project funded by the EQIP program. But the way ranchers usually share in that cost is by contributing their labor. So they have very little, if any, out-of-pocket expenses in this shared cost program. And if the rancher pays someone else to do the labor, they can write off that amount of money they're spending as a tax deduction against the EKIP assistance funds, which could be otherwise be taxable. So they're reducing their tax burden, they're probably paying their neighbor, and they are putting very little money out front. So another example of how this program works is, for example, two neighboring permittees can work it out so that one of them gets the EKIP funds for these conservation projects, and the other is the fencing contractor. Then the labor for building that fence, which is their contribution, is therefore tax deductible for each of the ranchers. So they're double dipping on a tax break. Another program is called the Livestock Forage Disaster Program, and that's from 2008. That program gives drought assistance to ranchers, and they can get up to $125,000 per year if there's severe, extreme, or exceptional drought, according to a federal agency determination of the level of drought. Ranchers can have an income of up to $900,000 and still qualify for these funds. The amount a rancher gets will depend on how many cows they're unable to graze because of the drought or because of wildfire. So more and more often, ranchers are taking advantage of this program as we see the effects of climate change. This program is problematic because it facilitates continued grazing over the long term in drought-stricken or fire-prone lands that are usually located in hot deserts that are just inherently unsuited for livestock grazing. At a state level, we have something called the Livestock Loss Boards, and these boards will reimburse ranchers for the value of livestock lost to depredations, or which means the killing of their livestock by a predator. This includes depredations by Mexican gray wolves. And I should note here that even though ranchers are paid when a wolf is accused of killing one of their cows, those same ranchers often insist that that wolf then be removed or killed. So they're getting paid for their loss and then harming an endangered species recovery program by insisting on the killing of a wolf that they have basically not been financially affected by. There is something called the Wolf Livestock Loss Demonstration Project Grant Program. That was authorized in 2009, and it provides federal assistance to states for two purposes, also to tribes. It provides money to prevent the predation by wolves and other animals, and then it also provides compensation for funding to reimburse livestock producers when they do have some predation. And then finally, sort of a hidden incentive is the open range laws. Both New Mexico and Arizona have open range laws, which mean that livestock operators aren't required to fence their cows in and keep them from straying onto private property, but you have to fence a cow out. So that means if your garden or your house or your car or even you are harmed by livestock coming onto your private land, or if livestock is on a highway that you're driving on and you hit it, you're responsible for the damage, not the livestock owner. So private property owners are required to build costly fences to keep cows out rather than have the commercial livestock operator pay to fence the cow in. There's a really good resource for information on these subsidies, and that's going to be found at the Arizona Grazing Clearinghouse.org website. It talks mostly about Arizona at the state level, but at the federal level, it mentions the subsidies I've just discussed.
Can you mention the name of that website one more time, please?
Sure. That's the Arizona Grazing Clearinghouse.org.
Okay. Thanks. Wow. That was very informative. I mean, being able to make $900,000 a year and still get subsidies, that's a pretty sweet deal, isn't it?
It is, along with your guaranteed very small potential increase in your rent for grazing cows.
Right, yeah. So I think that a lot of people have this kind of vague idea that ranches are owned by families that pass these ranches down to their children. Can you talk about the relatively recent phenomenon of wealthy people buying ranches to become hobby ranchers and sometimes just as a tax write-off?
Yeah, you know, it's becoming more common that people are selling their ranches. Maybe their kids no longer want to engage in livestock ranching. It's not very profitable for the most part because it's so difficult to make a living absent the subsidies. And folks often will talk about the fact that they're a fifth, sixth, or seventh generation rancher as a way to validate the abuses of these federally managed lands. And federal land managers will talk about the ranching or grazing lifestyle as a reason to continue grazing on public lands, even when the harm is really obvious. So there's this lifestyle that's very attractive, and it's been based on this generational argument for entrenching public lands grazing, but it ignores the fact that Western settlement was the federal government's way of displacing the people who already lived on these lands. The indigenous groups in New Mexico and in this region include the Chiricahua and Mescalero Apache, the Pueblos, the Piro, the Mansa, and the Tiwa tribes, and many others. These were the original inhabitants of the land along with the wildlife, but this very attractive grazing or ranching lifestyle entrenches livestock grazing authorizations despite the impacts. And, you know, this attractive lifestyle is bringing people who want to play cowboy. They come from back east, they buy a ranch, and they play cowboy. So it might have been kind of in the recent history that families or individuals would graze allotments to eke out a living on public lands. But we're finding that it's more often than not that it's a rich individual or a corporation that actually holds a livestock grazing permit or lease. Some of these small hobby ranchers refer to themselves as sustainable ranches, where the permittee is running very few cows and the conditions on the allotments are better than on other allotments. But these types of ranches aren't self-sustaining financially. And the only way that this happens is because someone can independently subsidize, in addition to all the federal subsidies, their hobby. They don't care about making money from it. They can graze these federal lands without completely decimating them. And then they use that as a talking point to say that grazing is good for the land, which there's very little science that even suggests that that could be the case. So this hobby ranching is just sort of a continued colonization and gentrification of the West. And it comes with tax breaks, tax deductions. They can get depreciation, tax deductions for wages, stock losses, and utilities. So it's almost like a moneymaker for some of these rich ranchers. And that would be ranchers in quotes again.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that for us. And I want to ask you another question about public lands, ranchers, and the economy. A lot of ranchers who graze livestock on public land claim that they contribute to local economies. And I want to ask you, Cindy, what percentage of beef produced in the U.S. actually comes from public lands? What's the real story here?
Well, by all accounts, public lands ranching contributes just about 3% of the beef marketed in the United States. So that's a very small amount, especially for the amount of damage it causes to hundreds of millions of acres of federally managed lands. There's about 54 million acres of federally managed lands in Arizona and New Mexico. So the contribution to local economies is often described as insignificant, even in agency documents, their National Environmental Policy Act documents, where they're trying to justify the impacts of livestock grazing. They'll say the financial contribution is insignificant. So as one example, there was a Forest Service analysis for the combined economic impacts on 14 grazing allotments in Arizona and New Mexico. And this was specifically the Gila and Apache National Forest. This was known as the State Line Project. The analysis from the Forest Service found that the annual grazing fee receipts for those 14 allotments was at best $46,000 a year. And they contributed less than $2.5 million per year across both forests and both states. And again, that was in a best case scenario. The infrastructure needed to manage those grazing allotments is often paid for by the federal government, as we talked about before. So that means that taxpayers are paying for that. So we're not getting a very good return on our investment. The State Line Project analysis also stated that it would cost over $1 million for the necessary fences and infrastructure. So they made it pretty clear that this wasn't a very good deal for the taxpayer. The infrastructure includes developing new water sources for the cows, and that it would take between 10 to 13 years of grazing receipts to recover the costs of paying for installing all that infrastructure. It's kind of a losing deal.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. That's a really good stopping point for us. We need to take a short break here on Earth Matters, KURU 89.1 FM, and then we'll be right back to continue our discussion with Cindy Toole about public lands grazing. Please stay tuned.